explanations so far don't ring very true as I see it, Bill. Go ahead.
Okay. This guy did also mention that there was a guy with the company that I don't know if he was disbelieving of the RF explanation, but he wanted to focus on power supply issues and power to the equipment, install something that would maybe measure the voltage, the DC voltage going to the equipment, if they could notice some change running up to the time of the failure. And yet, you know, the problems seem to coincide with rain or sleet events. So, I don't know. I suppose there's a rain or a sleet event that could cause a power issue. But unfortunately, that's all the information I got from the conversation. So, sorry if I failed to fill all the airtime here. AC2IS.
Yeah, with rain and sleet, you can build up a static charge, and that static charge can damage a receiver if things are not properly shielded. This communication link you're talking about, was this a terrestrial or a ground station? Where was the source and where was the sink of the signal, Bill, if you happen to know?
I don't know the exact details. I'm thinking that this is somewhere upstate New York. But it's, you know, if they're doing RF links to carry internet traffic, you know, you're talking about places where the population density is not high enough to get fiber everywhere, basically. And they were doing, you know, fiber was definitely part of their solutions, but they just had distances that were too far to cross that did not have pre-existing fiber, so they were adding some RF links and then having these issues during rain or sleet events. AC2IS.
When it comes to terrestrial links, you tend to put the transmitter and receiver on each side on high buildings, high towers, mountaintops, and things like that, which makes you very vulnerable to charge buildup from weather systems. So that's a guess. Paul, I've been using numbers like this I thought was space report number 184 of the space reports that were used on the TechNet. You said it was space report number 314, so I'm a little confused by that. WS2N, K2RIW, go ahead, Bill. Paul.
Yeah, I got them all listed here, one right after the other. Yeah, we're over. Well, since we've been keeping track over 5 years, so time gets by me. Wow. Yeah, I got 314. And the first 50 or so, I had on index cards and all of that, and eventually I graduated to computers. Back to this.
There's 52 weeks in a year. 5 years times 52 weeks is 260. So how can the number be as high as 314 over 5 years, Paul?
Oh, whatever it is, I know. Last time we talked about it, when we went over, or near 300, we're talking about over 5 years. So is it, yeah, whatever it is, 6 years now. But yeah, that's the number. And what's good about this program that I have, if let's say you bring up a topic in this, well, not the technical part or the science talk, but if it's a space-related topic, if I put that into this, like my own Google, you know, I click it in, and it'll tell me, go back to net, you know, 210, and you'll find a whole story on it, you know, something that we discussed in the past. It's really good.
Okay, somewhere along the line, I slipped the number, and I've been using this number system for some time, and you didn't catch me. I'll have to look back in my records and find out what the heck happened. Please continue with the space report, Paul.
Yeah, I heard 100 and something last week, but there was some distractions, so I didn't bother. Yeah, okay. Something called OneWeb. I've talked about OneWeb before. OneWeb is a company that plans on launching many, many satellites. The initial satellites they plan on launching is 900. They have plans on launching up to 2,000 of these things. And what they're going to be are, you know, satellites for the Internet. Once they get these things operating, you know, they have approval by the government. And, in fact, they plan on launching their first satellites. Hopefully, by the end of this year, they plan on putting 10 on a Soyuz Russian spacecraft. That will be their first 10, or maybe early January or something like that. But they already have contracts, actual contracts, one with Virgin Orbital is a company. They haven't flown their launcher, what do you call it, the Launcher 1 rocket. Let me drop it. They haven't flown that yet. They're getting close, but they have already 39 launch contracts with Launcher 1. Also, Blue Origin, which hasn't flown anything orbital yet, they are working on the New Glenn rocket. And they already have a contract with 5 different launches for them and multiple satellites. By the way, New Glenn is almost as big as the Saturn V rocket. That should probably launch. The earliest flight would be 2020 when they were first developing New Glenn. They were talking about 2019, but now it looks like 2020. So that's the story. And I mean, they plan on getting up to 2,000 satellites. SpaceX, for their early amount of satellites, they plan on doing like 4,000, going up to 10,000. So two companies are going to be competing for Internet traffic. These will be all relatively low Earth satellites in, I think, 300-mile plus range. So there won't be that latency that you would normally get if you're in a higher, for instance, geosynchronous orbit. So that was pretty interesting. The new administrator, Jim Bridenstine, he showed up at Jet Propulsion Laboratory this week, and he went for a tour. I think he was probably happy with what he saw out there, the development of a couple of things. But the two things he concentrated on was, one was InSight. InSight is the planned landing mission on Mars that's going to occur the day after this Thanksgiving, November 28th. Correction, November 26th. But that will be the day after Thanksgiving, November, and that was launched about 4 months ago, 3.5 months ago, and it's already passed its halfway point, so a couple more months from now, hopefully that thing will land. That's not a rover, but it's going to land in one place, and it's going to do a lot of seismology on Mars. It's going to have a probe that's going to dig itself around 15 feet into the ground. Deep into the ground. It's going to have a seismometer that's going to be placed on the surface of the ground by a robotic arm. See how that goes. It should land safely. The whole design was taken after the Phoenix Mars lander, which launched and landed like 10 years ago, 2007, I think, launched. And that was very successful. That went up to a high northern latitude. In this case, it's going to be in a very open area in the equator. It has the two solar panels. Each one is around, I think, a little over 12 feet in diameter. They're going to open up, you know, like a fan that you would play with as a kid. You know, you were just going to be a bunch of pieces of pizza pie. You know, I think there's 12 sections. It's going to open up like that, and that's the way the Phoenix one was, and it worked successfully, and they were very happy with it. The other piece of equipment that the administrator Bridenstine got to see was the helicopter that's also going to be going to Mars. This one. I know we've talked about the helicopter on the net before, but he actually got to see the thing. Well, not the exact one. He's got a model of it sitting on a table. But it weighs around 4 pounds. It's got these two massive blades on it. They swing, you know, when they come on, they oppose one another. One goes clockwise, the other one goes counterclockwise. And they're long, you know, it's like almost 4 feet long. You know, the diameter of this thing is going to be 4 feet. And then the body itself sits about a foot and a half off the ground. That's the way it looks. And it's going to be attached to the bottom of the rover. So when this 2020 rover goes to Mars, it'll be in 2020. It'll go through EDL, entry, descent, and landing, and it'll go through a whole process that they've done before. It'll separate from the cruise stage, start decelerating through the atmosphere at 13,000 miles an hour, heating up its heat shield. The heat shield will eventually separate, and a parachute will come out, big, gigantic parachute at supersonic speeds, slow down the 2020 rover. And then you might remember the rover that's there now, Curiosity, had this sky crane system. The sky crane will have these eight rocket jets on there. Will come on and start slowing it down, and eventually these cables, they have a cable contraption that will actually start to lower the 2020 rover down, you know, down toward the direction of Mars as its sky crane is, you know, firing rockets. It'll get very close to the surface. Rover will land with the, you know, the wheels will all open up before it lands. The six wheels will hit the surface. At that time, these pyrotechnic devices will go off and guillotine these little cables, and the sky crane will fly away some distance, you know, a mile or so away, and crash into the surface, leaving the rover on the ground. But under the rover, will be this massive, you know, only 4 pounds, but it's a pretty big helicopter. Helicopter will, you know, they'll disconnect it from the rover, and the rover will drive away, leaving the helicopter on the ground. When it comes time to launch the helicopter, naturally has batteries on board, and above the two spinning rotors, above that is this rectangular solar panel. So that's how it's going to charge. They'll be able to charge the battery, and their first flight, when they test it, will go up only about 10 feet or so, 10 feet high, and then, you know, fly some distance and then land. And over time, that will change. You know, they'll go further and further. So that's an interesting piece of equipment. They've tested this thing at the equivalent air pressure. The equivalent of taking it up to 100,000 feet on Earth and spinning these rotors. So, I mean, the amount of pressure that's on Mars, I think, is less than 1%. I think it's 0.7% of the pressure here on Earth. Wow. They have to spin very fast, these blades. It's going to be like 10 times faster than a helicopter would spin its blades on Earth. I came up with numbers on the NASA site that said between 2,400 and 2,900 RPMs. So that's pretty incredible. They've already tested it. They put it into a chamber in Plum Island. I forget the name of the facility in Ohio, but they have this massive 100-foot diameter chamber that they can put things in, and they put it in there, and they flew it around. Everything works fine. So that's pretty good. Any comments on the questions about the helicopter or anything else for now before I move on. This is WS2S. Okay, still getting ready for not only a man return flight from America, from Florida, which will be either Dragon or Starliner, Dragon by SpaceX or Starliner by Boeing. But NASA's still working on the Orion spacecraft, put the Orion spacecraft into eventually moon orbit. Initially designed to go to Mars, and they still have plans on eventually doing Mars, but for now the short-term goal is to send four people on a ride to the moon, orbit moon, and eventually come back, and that won't happen until the earliest would be like 2021 or so. The first unmanned flight take place before that, also to the moon for a couple of weeks and back, make sure everything works, and that will probably be 2020, I'm guessing. But they need to complete things, and one of the things they need to complete is the mobile platform. The mobile platform is this massive piece of structure that holds that will be holding the SLS, the Space Launch System. This thing is like 400 feet tall, weighs millions of pounds, and near the top they have this walkway that's eventually going to connect to the top of the space station, to the Orion spacecraft, and that's all completed. All the different feed lines, you know, for hydrogen and for oxygen, which is going to attach to the SLS, because that's what it flies on. We'll also have two solid booster rockets, similar to what they had on Space Shuttle, but bigger. They put this whole setup, this whole stack, but on top of that, you'll have the second stage Centaur rocket with four Centaur rockets attached to the second stage. And on top of that, you'd have the Orion spacecraft with people in it, and above that, you'll have the launch abort system, which will be able to produce like 500,000 pounds alone to pull the spacecraft away from the whole stack in case there was a problem. Now, this all has to ride on top of this mobile platform. So next week, or I guess this coming week, they plan on moving this setup for the first time. It's over near the vehicle assembly building. They plan on going under there with the mobile crawler, as they call it, and that will go underneath it and raise itself up, connecting to the mobile platform, and plan on driving a couple miles to Launch Complex 39B, just as a test. They want to see how everything works, how everything lines up, take all kinds of measurements, whatever they're going to do, and when they're done, they plan on bringing it back to the vehicle assembly building, and actually driving it into the vehicle assembly building, which will stay for the next year or so when people in NASA will go through the process of taking the solid booster rockets, the first stage, which would be four shuttle liquid engines, attach that to the bottom of the liquid hydrogen tank and liquid oxygen tank, and eventually the second stage on top of that, and eventually the Orion capsule on top of that, and eventually there'll be a launch abort system. So this thing's going to stand like over 360 feet tall. And this will be the whole setup that eventually will be brought back out to Launch Complex 39B in a couple of years, hopefully 2020, if there's no more delays, and they'll be able to launch this thing to the moon unmanned, followed by a manned flight a year or so after that. Also to the moon. Let me drop it for any comments or questions.
What I don't quite understand, Paul, is why is the crawler with equipment on top of it going out to 39B, and then driving it back to the vertical assembly building. I missed something there. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, they want to see how it does. Thing is, you know, completely rebuilt. It's much bigger and much much heavier than the original launch complex, mobile launch platform that was originally built for an Ares mission. Ares was part of the Constellation mission that was canceled, so they need to bring it out and check all kinds of measurements and whatever they're going to do with lasers and everything. I want to make sure everything's square, straight, and it's one of those deals. They just want to make sure everything goes correctly, because the next time it goes out there, it's going to have the whole rocket set up on it, and if there's any problems that are going to occur, they want to make sure that they come across them now instead of later. You know, when it goes out there, you have connections on the mobile launch complex that eventually have to attach these massive pipes that are, 17-inch diameter pipes that eventually connect to big hydrogen and oxygen cylinders that are out there. And that all has to work. It all has to fit. They don't want to be a, a quarter of an inch off, back in there.
The Orion stack, the Orion spacecraft stack that's capable of going to the moon with, I think, as many as 4 human beings on board, how tall will that be and how big and how heavy when you compare it to the Saturn V, Apollo 11? Is the Orion larger in diameter, taller, heavier? Over to you, Paul, K2IW.
Yeah, I think the Saturn V was, 27 feet in diameter, as I recall. Where this is, it's a little different. It's got this, it's like 50 feet across, because it's got this center tank setup, hydrogen, 500,000 gallons of hydrogen, I think 250,000 gallons of oxygen, on top of that, and then, it's in one big tank. In fact, the tank kind of looks like an design from the external tanks that used to be on the space shuttle. In fact, they even got to look orange, but it's taller, it's bigger. And then to the left and to the right, you're going to have solid booster rockets. You remember those two things attached to the space shuttle. Well, they used to have 4 segments going up on each one. It was separate pieces that were attached together. So there were like 4 cylinders. This is 5, so it's bigger. They found a way to produce more thrust out of it. Each one is going to be 3.5 million pounds of thrust on the left and 3.5 million pounds of thrust on the right. And then you're going to have the 4 retired, let's call them retired space shuttle engines, the RS-25 engines is what they were called. So space shuttle used to have 3 on the bottom. This one's got 4 on the drop. Each one producing, I think, 550,000 pounds or something like that. It's called 500,000 pounds each. So you're going to get 2 million pounds of thrust just with the liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engines at the bottom of the stack. You combine that with the 3.5, and you're up to over 10 million pounds of thrust. I think it's something like 10.5 million pounds of thrust, they said. Gives you an idea. Saturn V was 7.5 million pounds of thrust, so it's going to be bigger. And that's the story on the first launch. Is actually going to have, on the second stage, 1 Centaur rocket. Let me drop it. And the second launch will have that as well. They're building another launch complex, a mobile launch platform, similar to this, but bigger. Of course, the next iteration of the space launch system is actually going to be bigger. Instead of having 1 engine on the second stage, they call them RL-10, built by Aerojet Rocketdyne, it's going to have 4 of them. So, naturally, it's got a longer tank, it's going to be about 40 feet higher. It's going to have a different gangway, you know, a white room that's going to have this arm that's going to swing over and attach to the Orion spacecraft. So that's going to be about 40 feet higher. You know, things are going to actually change. So they're going to have two versions of space launch system. Some will, you know, be able to launch like satellites. They want to launch one to Jupiter, Europa Express. What they're going to launch to Jupiter. So they're going to use first iteration of the space shuttle, space launch complex to do that. And height wise, I think this one is going to be just about the same size of Saturn V. The next one's going to be higher, like 30 or 40 feet longer than the Saturn V. Back to you there.
Well, when that thing blasts off, it's going to make a response on the seismic detectors for miles around, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, I remember when the Saturns used to go off, even the shuttles, they said that seismic detectors would register. Yeah. So, this is going to be a lot bigger. The shuttle went up, I think that was 5.5 million pounds of thrust when the shuttles went up, something like that. But this is going to be as big as twice that amount. Okay, on another topic, Virgin Orbital. I mentioned them before. They're the ones they plan on launching, one of their contracts, they plan on launching satellites for OneWeb, the internet company, that plans on launching their first 10 satellites by the Russians. It's not a Soyuz vehicle. Actually, I'm not sure if it's going to be the Russians. Sometimes they will launch it on a Soyuz rocket from French Guiana. I do have to check on that. But whatever it is, they're going to start launching their first 10 rockets very soon. But Orbital, Virgin Orbital anyway, has this Launcher 1 rocket that they're developing. And Launcher 1 is going to attach to the bottom of a 747, port wing. They built this setup that is going to attach to this rocket. So it's kind of like the Pegasus idea that NASA has launched like 40 or 50 of these Pegasus rockets, and they've launched from V-52s and eventually from L-1011 Lockheed jumbo jets. Well, this company, Virgin Orbital, which is really, it's really like the same company as Virgin Galactic, run, you know, primarily by Richard Branson. Virgin Orbital is like a spinoff of that Virgin Galactic company. And they've flown their 747, specially built for this process, two times now. And they're getting ready to actually test their Launcher 1 rocket, and they think within a month or so. So I'll be anxious to see how that works out. It's good because they can take this plane anywhere, the rocket, and get any kind of inclination they want. They can go orbital, they can go equatorial, whatever they want to do, and have a lot of other companies that are also signed up for Launcher 1. He got the 747. It was one of his old planes. As you know, he probably has quite a few. He owns Virgin Airlines. So he took one of his older 747s and decided to make a launcher out of it. And he put a name on it called Cosmic Girl. So he's into all this type of thing. He named the 747, and getting ready to test launch a Launcher 1 probably within a month or so. Let me drop it. And that's it, except for the dust storm update. We talked about it. Opportunity is one of the rovers that are still operating on Mars, or hopefully It's been out of commission for a couple of months. At the end of May, they wound up with a global storm. So, you know, on Mars. So they have this dust storm, and eventually it's starting to have decreased clouds. It's dropping. They get down to around 2.1. It's got as high as, I think, over 10. When I said these numbers, it's called tau. Tau is the amount of light that can get through these clouds. They need 0.5 really to operate, and they need like 0.15 just to see if they can make contact with the rover. They figure the batteries are all dead right now. Right now that's down to 2.1. Drop it. People at JPL, they would like to try for, you know, months, you know, 3, 4, 5 months to try to make contact. They think it's going to be problematic to do that. And meanwhile, NASA's only going to give them 45 days. If they don't do it, they're going to pull the switch. Very bad move. You know, you have a spacecraft or a rover sitting on Mars now, still operating. Still operating, but it would be a shame to disconnect it. Dick, over to you. This is WS2N. If any comments, questions, we'll get in late.
We got 5 minutes before the midnight hour. You're absolutely right. I copied the numbers from one page to the next and mixed up the numbers way back in July 22. July 22 was space report number 308. And you're absolutely right. This is space report number 314 tonight. So ever since July, I was using the wrong numbers when I copied them from the previous page. Okay, that was TechNet number 1714, if I didn't skip those numbers. Space report number 314. Science talk number 44. And 73 you all. See you next week. Bye-bye for now. K2IW clear and listening, and over for Roy for any final comments. Like, Roy, you might want to give your addresses again just to make sure people have got them. AC2GS, K2IW in the TechNet.
Dick, what was your number? I'll try to keep track of yours.
My number is 1714. You're 314, and Paul is 44. Over to you, Paul.
Okay, very good. I copy that. Thanks. We'll be here next week, and we'll try to get some more traffic in, because I know Roy's not going to be here. So, have a good holiday next week, Roy. Over to you, AC2GSWS1.
Yeah, I guess you're going to try to make a longer space report next week. Over to you, Roy. And we're going to miss you, AC2GS, K2IW.
Thank you very much. If the FCC would allow it, I'd do a recording. I just want to remind everyone that the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. But if you put anything before @ac2gs.com, it comes to me anyway. And the link, which I'll put up in about 2-3 minutes, is at roy.ac2gs.com. And once again, thanks to everyone who participated, and I'm going to miss you guys next week, but I'm sure I'll be back the following week with twice as much stuff to babble about.
Time is 12:04 a.m. 73, and good night from the W2VL repeater. 630 WQVL repeater system.
Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Thank you.
VL repeater system. Thank you.